Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are wrapping up today our review of a book that came out in 2013 titled Confessions of a Molly Mormon, Trading Perfectionism for Peace, Fear for Faith, Judging for Joy. It was written by a Mormon woman by the name of Ilana K. Shelley. She spells Ilana, E-L-O-N-A. And as I've mentioned, we do have a review of this book on our website at mrm.org. Where exactly can they find that article, Eric?
mrm.org/Molly Mormon Review with hyphens between the words.
And the reason why, and I need to state this again, the reason why I feel it's important to look at a book like this, even though she is not a general authority in the church, and certainly what she says is her own opinion, there's no question of that. But I think it's important sometimes as Christians that we understand where many Latter-day Saints are coming from so that we can, I guess you could say, at least in my case with this book, have a much more better understanding of where they're coming from. And even at times, a sympathy for what a lot of Latter-day Saints go through, and I would say because of their church. Now, she has learned, according to the book, how to handle all this. But as I have said before, I think the way she's learned to handle it is by ignoring a lot of what her church leaders have said, and to ignore even what some of her own written scriptures have to say. Well, today we're going to look at the subject of the Sabbath. In Mormonism, they refer to Sunday as the Sabbath. Technically, the Sabbath is really Saturday. Sunday is understood by Christians more of being the Lord's Day, but that's not a big issue, not one that I would make a big argument over. But in Mormonism, Sunday is very important. In her chapter, chapter 4, you can watch Johnny Lingo only so many times. You would probably only get that if you were a Latter-day Saint or study the Mormon culture. And I don't have time to go in it right now. But anyway, she says on that same page, "As I got a little older, I continued to enjoy socializing on Sunday. But from what I was being taught, both at church and around the dinner table, I began to realize that there were a whole lot of Sunday rules I needed to follow. Since I wanted to get into the celestial kingdom someday," see, these are key words you cannot ignore, "I was anxious to get all those rules in my head so God wouldn't be mad at me for accidentally breaking one. Besides, knowing all of the rules helped me impress my teachers and win their praise. Thus, the Sabbath nitpicking began." She says on page 54, "If you were a good Mormon, you had to attend church both morning and evening every Sunday. The only possible exception was if you were really sick." She has "really" in italics. "And even then, you had to be more dead than alive to stay home if you still wanted to be counted among the truly faithful. Another hard and fast rule was no shopping on Sunday." And that is a big joke around here in Utah. If you want to go to the store when there usually are no crowds, it's probably going to be on a Sunday. It's a good day to go golfing, too, because there's nobody out there but those sinful Gentiles golfing on Sunday.
On page 56, she continues and says, "For my parents, Sunday usually meant nice long afternoon naps while kids played at home or visited friends. Sometimes after their naps, they played backyard baseball with us. It was so much fun that I was pretty sure we were breaking the Sabbath. The same was true of game playing after our evening sacrament meetings. I love playing Rook, Pit, and Sorry with our family, but didn't mention it in class when we had lessons about keeping the Sabbath day holy because I was afraid the teacher would think we weren't honoring the day properly."
Now, why would she draw that conclusion, Eric?
Certainly because that's the kind of idea that was conveyed through the local leadership, I'm sure.
I would say not only the local leadership, but from even the top down. So these ideas permeate on the local level, and naturally she feels apprehensive to even mention the activities that she had as an individual on the Sabbath day, as she calls it.
Now, later when she was an adult and had her own children, her guilt level still is there. Listen to what she says on page 57. When our church meetings were over for the day, the craziness didn't end. It was still the Sabbath, so there was still many rules to be enforced. No friends, no TV, no video games, no recreational cooking, no movies, no secular music, no breathing. Okay, maybe not that last one, but close.
Didn't Larry H. Miller, who owned the Jazz when he was alive, he wouldn't even go watch his own basketball team play if a game was on Sunday.
And even when they played here in Utah against the Chicago Bulls in the championship on a Sunday, he actually took a drive in the car and listened to the radio, but he did not go to the stadium to see it.
Would some Mormons say that could have been considered fudging? I would tend to think so.
Yeah, I guess.
But anyway, where is she getting all these ideas? Again, they are coming down from the leadership, and Mormon leaders have had something very specific to say as to how a Mormon should behave on Sunday. For instance, we have Spencer W. Kimball. Now, this is a quote that's from The Miracle of Forgiveness on page 46, but it's also found in Teachings of Presidents of the Church, Spencer W. Kimball, that came out in 2006. That is a correlated manual. That means it was approved by the First Presidency. We would have to assume that what is written on page 169 of that manual is something that is binding on the life of the Latter-day Saint. What does it say?
We have become a world of Sabbath breakers. On the Sabbath, the lakes are full of boats, the beaches are crowded, the shows have their best attendance, the golf links are dotted with players. The Sabbath is the preferred day for rodeos, conventions, family picnics, and ball games are played on the sacred day.
Are we to assume that when Spencer Kimball uses the phrase Sabbath breakers, that he means that in a positive light?
No.
No, I would say absolutely not. But he also said that the Sabbath is a holy day in which to do worthy and holy things.
Abstinence from work and recreation is important but insufficient. The Sabbath calls for constructive thoughts and acts, and if one merely lounges about doing nothing on the Sabbath, he is breaking it. To observe it, one will be on his knees in prayer, preparing lessons, studying the gospel, meditating, visiting the ill and distressed, writing letters to missionaries, taking a nap, reading wholesome material, and attending all the meetings of that day at which he is expected.
Okay, now, again, that was Spencer Kimball. It's found in the Teachings of the Presidents of the Church, Spencer W. Kimball, and I want to say again, it came out in 2006. You can find that quotation on page 170. There's also a reference from True to the Faith, a gospel reference, which came out in 2004, and that's found on page 146 in that book. Eric, it sounds pretty clear that there are certain things that Mormons must not do on the Sabbath, lest they become a Sabbath breaker.
Right.
I don't get the impression from what I read in Ms. Shelley's book that she would agree with that conclusion. So the question is as a Latter-day Saint, would you be safer following the admonitions of a Spencer Kimball and a church manual that was published in 2006, or would you be safer as a Latter-day Saint to perhaps follow the advice of a Alana Shelley?
How much do you have to follow? I mean, what percentage, for instance, when the leaders say you have to give a 10% tithe and you decide, well, 10% is just a little bit too much. What if I gave a 7% tithe? Or what if I only attend 2 Sunday services a month? Or so on and so forth. Are you allowed to make your own rules and basically chip away at what the leaders have said? This is what needs to be done. It seems to be pretty clear that this is what is required. If you're going to hold on to your temple recommend necessary to be able to have eternal life. And Bill, this is what bothers me the most about this, because these leaders have imposed such harsh requirements on their people that they have taken it to an extreme. And yes, in Utah, you very rarely see anybody wearing white shirts and dresses at the local Costco or going out to the local restaurants. Matthew 23:13-15, this is what Jesus said. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. For you neither enter yourselves nor allow those who would enter to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel across sea and land to make a single proselyte, and when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as yourselves. And Bill, I think that the Mormon leadership has turned something that can be very constructive, honoring the Sabbath day, turned it into something legalistic, and it's caused this woman terrible angst.
She admits later on in the chapter that even though she's had a change of heart regarding the Sabbath, a lot of her Sundays remain pretty much the same, although she does say this on page 61. Occasionally, we talk about what it really means to keep the Sabbath day holy and why certain activities might not be appropriate on Sunday. When given the opportunity to manage themselves, our children generally chose to honor the Sabbath. They sometimes played computer games or watched TV, but they also chose to attend church, watch church videos, go to firesides with their friends, play board games together, and involve themselves in other good things. It was wonderful to enjoy the Sabbath with my family instead of battling constant frustration and guilt. Again, though, we have to point back to what Mormons have been instructed in their manuals. For instance, you have, again, teachings of presidents of the church, Spencer W. Kimball. It seems odd that Spencer Kimball seemed to be the most outspoken on subjects such as these, and perhaps that's why a lot of Mormons didn't really like some of the things that Spencer Kimball had to say. But again, this is also found in Gospel Principles, the 2009 edition on page 141. It says, our prophets have told us that we should not shop, hunt, fish, attend sports events, or participate in similar activities on that day. President Spencer W. Kimball cautioned, however, that if we merely lounge about doing nothing on the Sabbath, we are not keeping the day holy. The Sabbath calls for constructive thoughts and acts. And I would assume that a lot of the acts that probably Michelle would condone as being certainly okay on that day would not be condoned by the leadership.
As we wrap this series up, I want to read you the last paragraph of her book, page 123. She says, that Molly Mormon urged to rush around trying to do more than is humanly possible to qualify for the celestial kingdom no longer haunts my life. Christ has redeemed my soul from the hell I lived in when fear controlled my life. It has been replaced with a glorious sense of peace and joy.
That is a puzzling statement for me because understanding Mormonism as I do, when she talks about the hell she lived in and the fear that controlled her life, I would have to assume that a lot of that hell and that fear came from the very teachings that maybe today she just would rather not let bother her. And is that what a good Mormon is supposed to do when it comes to the teachings of their leaders?
Does she have a right, according to the Mormon religion, to be able to replace that with the glorious sense of peace and joy? Is that a true peace and joy that she's experiencing, or is it something that she just conjured up into her own mind?
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org.